Les Mails, how will the new National Congress of Australia's First Peoples work better than the defunct Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission?
Well, I think the old commission had run out of its credibility, and there was a need to revamp and restructure to try and have a body that is going to be doing a good job in representing the voice of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. I think the strength of this new organisation is the ethical standards that it has set for itself. So I think that's the real positive. I've already made comments publicly, including when I was a candidate for the National Co-Chair position, that the representative basis of the National Congress needs to be strengthened and improved, and that's one of the mandates that I believe that I have now, is to help build up the representative nature of the organisation and to increase its membership to provide a wide input from all around Australia.
Well, Warren Mundine has been critical of that, saying that the Congress won't have the support of its constituents, and you yourself have been quoted as saying that it will be difficult given the fact that the leadership is a co-chairmanship. How will you overcome those difficulties?
Well, on the co-chair leadership, I think it's been blown out of proportion. I suggested as one of the reforms that should be looked at, and I'm quite happy to leave that to the meetings that the National Congress is going to occur in June and to membership generally. It's not a significant point for me. I made it as a suggestion of efficiency and effectiveness. In relation to Warren Mundine's comments, look, Warren is quite entitled to have an opinion, as is any other person entitled to have about this. What I am going to do is I'm going to call for people to make criticisms and suggestions about how the Congress can be improved. And if Warren's got suggestions about how to improve this, he's quite welcome to present that. So it's really a question of what is the groundswell out there? What are people saying? We've heard from Warren. I'd like to hear from others.
Does the fact that the Congress is government-funded mean that you're going to have to toe a government line?
Absolutely not. And in fact, the design of the Congress quite clearly was that it be an independent organisation. That's why it's not a statutory body, and it is a registered company, and that it be able to operate independently, that it not be under threat of being closed down by the government because it upsets the government of the day. And that's the purpose of this Congress. I think that's what the membership is on about, and that's part of our job, the National Co-Chairs, to ensure that we maintain that independence and that we maintain that strength of the voice that's coming from the communities. And this is the challenge, how we deliver that. We're very pleased that the government has given us support. It has gone to the United Nations and said that it supports the National Congress as being the voice of the Aboriginal people. It's supported by giving us financial support to get us started off the ground, but we also have to go about with fundraising to get independent funding to ensure our survival in the long term.
Now, in a column for the National Indigenous Times, you say that you'll be advocating a policy of public diplomacy for Indigenous groups. What do you mean by that?
This is a known term in terms of government relations, that we know what normal diplomacy is, where it's a discussion between government and government, and generally these are very much concerned with international trade and international agendas. However, there is also a policy called public diplomacy, which is about how different governments and different societies are engaged in a broader way. So it means basically, from the way I've presented this, is that the National Congress will be very interested in dealing with the national government of Australia, but we're also very interested in meeting with other sectors, for example, with unions, the education sector, with the private sector, and with the public generally, and the media, that we want to engage in all those different areas to sell our messages, to have our voice being heard widely. Similarly, it's not just the National Congress. We'll be encouraging in the Aboriginal communities for them to have voice, for our newspapers to have voice, for organisations to have voice, and so on. So it's not like we're going to try and monopolise any discussions that go on with government. The whole idea is that we are empowering everybody to be participating in the agenda for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's rights, and in a broad way, and so on. So the Congress, I think, is key to all this by engaging our own people and our own community in the dialogue with the government and Australian society. And this is what I call public diplomacy and engagement. Now, of course, these are suggestions I'm bringing into the National Congress. They're my own views. I hope that they're experienced views and well thought through views, and I'll be taking that to the National Congress when they meet in June to see if they can support this concept of how we engage across government in a purposeful way. I'm looking very much forward to having real discussions with government about policies and improvements. This is our chance as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to engage directly with government in relation to our interests.
There are plenty of disputes between different Indigenous groups and different leaders about the effectiveness or otherwise of the Northern Territory intervention. Which way do you think will the Congress go in that debate?
In the Northern Territory situation, I've already made it clear, in fact, for a long time now, including in my candidacy of running for this national co-chair, that the emergency action that was taken out in 2007 was an emergency action. It's now over 4 years on from when that happened, and the evidence, the hard evidence, which is what the government pushed about, they wanted evidence-based policies, shows that it has failed as an emergency action. So I'm calling now for a review of policy to put in place what is long-term or permanent policy about dealing with the needs of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities in the Northern Territory and across all of Australia. So I want to end the emergency approach. It's a panic approach. It's one that leads to a lot of waste of taxpayers' money. It leads to inefficiency. It leads to disempowerment of communities. And let's come back to a serious policy approach, which is based upon these communities and their futures and their directions that they want to go. Now, the government has talked about this. The Northern Territory government has talked about this. And other people have talked about this, people who call themselves leaders, but it's not happening. So I'm saying end the emergency. Let's get back to serious policy.
Les Mailsey, you've been quoted in the past as saying that there's a need to depart from the native title process and go back to focusing on land rights. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a big issue. I, in fact, delivered the Mabo lecture in 2009, where I discussed it in quite a lot of detail. But the problem is that the native title laws that have been put in place now, it's starting in 1994 or late 1993 when the Native Title Act was first passed, but particularly the 1998 amendments and a number of amendments, subsequent members, almost every year since 1998, have turned that legislation into something completely different from the High Court Mabo decision. And not only that, but it's wandered far away from the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which talks about people's rights to ownership of their lands and territories and their rights to control the development of resources on their territories and so on. A good example of this is in the Indigenous Land Use Agreements, which are being used now by the government to advance issues. We're seeing that these are causing great splinters in the Aboriginal community, particularly in Western Australia, with the mining industry trying to continue to exploit the resources and using money to divide the communities. I also have had some very practical examples given to me of where the negotiation of these agreements is not about recognising the rights of the Aboriginal peoples to their territories and resources. It's actually about extinguishing those rights. So the governments have been insisting on clauses in these agreements where the signatures to the agreements are giving up rights which they should not be giving up. And these are things that have to be examined much more closely, and we have to look for much better results, which are based upon the right of free prior informed consent and the right of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as owners of their lands and territories to defend their rights over the resources and the development.